started now. You can have a seat if you're not already. My name is Grace Mauser, and I'm the Outreach Coordinator with the International Affairs Society. Thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight. I know it's midterm season for a lot of you, so we really appreciate you being here for what's sure to be a really interesting discussion. I'm going to introduce our speaker. Ms. Lula Chin is currently the Program Director of the Sino-African Initiative, an enterprise of Sister Cities International. She has been designing, developing, and managing this program by conducting research in the U.S., Africa, and China, and facilitating diplomatic cooperation between all three nations. Ms. Chin has a BA from Georgetown and an MA in Security Studies and International Studies from the Wall School of Foreign Service. And please help me in welcoming Ms. Chin up to discuss the Sino-African Initiative, its purpose, and China's role in Africa.
Okay, can everybody hear me? That's good. Great. Good evening, everyone. It's really a pleasure to be here. I'd like to thank the Seeger Center, National Affairs Society, Grace, and Dr. Sutter for bringing me here and giving me this opportunity to talk a little bit more about what it is that I'm doing. And just thank you so much for coming and speaking with me and discussing. And I hope there's a lot of great questions and a lot of great discussion that will come from this presentation. As Grace mentioned, I am the program manager at Sister Cities International for the Sino-African Initiative. And I'm here today to talk a little bit more about the program. This program ties together US, Chinese, and African cities to do projects in urban poverty alleviation and economic development within African cities. So it's actually not just China and Africa, it's really US, China, and Africa working together. To kind of give you a good background of how this is coming together, I'll first give you a little bit of background about Sister Cities International, tell you a little bit more about what we do and our network, and what we already had in place that made this sort of trilateral cooperation possible. In addition, I'll go into a little bit more about the dynamics of the foreign relations and diplomatic relations between US, China, and Africa, and how it kind of affected this program as it moved along. But really, my focus will be on the Sino-African Initiative, which is a subnational program. It's not so much the national relations that is driving what everybody's doing. It's actually really focused on the city level. So what we're looking at are relationships between cities and how they're working together, and then kind of seeing how that fits within the entire scope of national policy and international relations right now. And I know a few of you are interested in maybe internship opportunities or volunteer opportunities with Sister Cities International, so I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end as well. I'll go ahead and begin. And before I do want to preface that I'm not a development expert and I'm not a China-Africa expert. Like Grace mentioned, my background's actually in security studies. I did a lot with nuclear weapons policy and territorial disputes. That's really my background. So going into this was very new for me. I had a very different perspective. In terms of academics, this wasn't my background. So if you have questions about that, I'm happy to answer them. But just to kind of let you know. Okay, great. First, to begin, what is Sister Cities International? I actually brought a couple of our directories. I'm sure many of you have Sister Cities in your own hometowns and you had no idea.
So I'll pass these around. You can kind of look through them and see if maybe you have a few Sister Cities from your hometown. Sister Cities was started by President Eisenhower in 1956. The idea behind Sister Cities is to connect US cities with cities abroad so that they can really develop relationships, citizens can get to know each other, and they can work on projects and activities and really strengthen US relationships with others abroad. The reason why he started this idea of Sister Cities is because after World War II, he really felt that if US citizens had understood citizens in Germany and Japan a lot better, it really could have encouraged more peace and less war. So actually a lot of
the foundations of our organization is focused on peace building. So even now, if you look through the directory, you'll see that a lot of US sister cities are still with Germany and Japan. Our organization in DC, we're the national membership organization. So we have about 550 members all over the United States. They're connected to about 2,000 partners worldwide in about 140 countries. And so we help them facilitate a lot of their projects. We support them with any knowledge or best practices that they need, and we work on different projects together, like the Sino-African Initiative. A sister city, as I mentioned, it's a broad-based, long-term relationship that where two cities join in an MOU, and it only becomes approved once the mayors or the highest elected or appointed officials of the cities approve it. So you're, most of them, you know, some of them are decades and decades old, but they started with mayors maybe from 50 years ago, and a lot of them will re-sign later on. And that's kind of the foundation of what forms this relationship. In terms of what these relationships do, they really focus in areas in arts and culture, youth and education, economic development, and community development. So what you see from sister cities is that really creates a platform for different projects to occur, different activities to occur. And what happens is one city might feel very comfortable with another city because they already know people there, they know who to contact in order to do other projects. I'm actually gonna go back a little bit and talk about, so we have this network, right, where we have all of these US cities that have connections all over the world, and they actually know people within these other cities, and they know how to talk to them and how to work with them. So about 5 years ago, the Gates Foundation approached us and said, hey, we're thinking about doing some development projects in Africa. We'd like to do a big set of them, micro projects focused on different cities, and we want to use your network to see if maybe it's a good mix. Especially because these projects are long term, they're automatically sustainable. You already have people going back and forth anyway. You know exactly who the municipal people are, with municipal officers within each of the cities are. So, you know, let's give this a try. So we launched that project. We ended up running 24 projects in 13 countries all over Africa, and they were US African sister cities. From there, we started talking a little bit more about, well, what new things can we do with sister cities if we know that, you know, this is possible, we can do this many at once. Kind of what new exciting things can we do? And at this point, there's been a lot of discussion already. You know, there has been for the last, you know, decades even, about what China's doing in Africa, and there was a lot of interest in seeing how we can bring the Chinese into some of this work, especially because you know, especially in the West, you get a lot of negative press about what the Chinese are doing in Africa, and maybe not as some of the spin isn't as positive. So we thought, well, what happens when we bring everybody together? So the initial focus was really on business and CSR. We were thinking we would connect trilateral city partnerships, so we'd connect U.S., Chinese, and African cities, kind of connect their businesses and see if we can bring in some CSR and have both U.S. businesses and Chinese businesses work on corporate social responsibility projects in African cities. And that was kind of, that was actually the groundwork of what had happened when I came in. And so you're kind of sitting upon this this discourse about, you know, what's happening between China and Africa. There's a lot of discussion about competition, there's a lot of negativity. And it's kind of, we're trying to figure out where we can cooperate. So this project started with this framework. We're going to focus on business and CSR. We're going to try to tie together three cities from US, different African countries, and China, try to connect their businesses and see if we can do projects in African cities. And with this, I started to do more research about it. I started to ask people, I started to go around. You know, I asked some of your own professors here. Ambassador Shin has a lot of great knowledge about what the Chinese are doing in Africa. I went overseas and started talking to people in Kenya and South Africa. Talked a lot with you know, Chinese embassy officials, a lot of Chinese on the ground, different companies, Chinese companies in Africa. You know, spoke a lot with different Chinese organizations about how they thought about, viewed this, organizations from Beijing. And very quickly, I started to discover a few trends. First of all, using the term corporate social responsibility was a horrible idea. There is a book written about how each country perceives corporate social responsibility in different ways. So every country sees it differently, and we're here to tie together, you know, like 5, 6, maybe even more countries in the same concept, the same idea, and nobody even knows what it means, or they all have different views of what it means. So that immediately became evident, and it became clear that, you know, maybe this wasn't such a great idea, or we should look at different terms. Maybe take off corporate social responsibility and call it something like economic development and see how other people will view it. And also, in addition to that, I think using that term CSR, throwing it around a little bit, it got a lot of negative attention. People would kind of flinch at it, and you know, that's fine. It was a good lesson to learn, but it was also good for us to realize what might be work in this and what might not. In a project that was already set to have more than two partners, which would already be hard enough. Adding a third leg, you have to be very careful. It became very clear that you had to be very careful about how you wanted to talk about different issues. So from there, we also did a lot of background research on national policy to see if there would be any pushback nationally in terms of what we were trying to do. And really, if you look at the white papers from China out about what they want to do in Africa, if you look at their 5-year plans, about this time, I think Obama had come out with his sub-Saharan policy. If you look at all of these different policies, there's not a lot of conflict. I mean, there's different areas where maybe people are saying, yeah, we shouldn't try this too much. But if you're trying to do urban poverty alleviation or economic development, these types of projects, there's a lot of convergence. And there's a lot of ideas that are very similar. And so in terms of policy, if you're just looking plainly at the different points that each country wants to push with respect to their relations in Africa, it's really, there seem to be a lot more areas where cooperation can happen. And I think a lot of people were thinking along these lines, but for some reason there was just a lot of underpinning competition or maybe a little bit of distrust going on at that time, or even now. So for all of its sensitivities, when I started asking people, well, what if we do a trilateral project? Like, what happens when we actually try this? Everybody seemed okay with it. Most people were, most of them were like, oh, that's an interesting idea. Well, you know, here are my maybe 2, 3, 4 concerns, but you know, you can give it a shot. And this is coming from nationally. It's coming from people who are representing the Chinese government or, you know, the US government and others. And I thought that was really interesting because in terms of looking at a lot of the news media or the news, the media, or even a lot of reporting, it's kind of hard to tell that. But really in talking with people, it became, well, we're not gonna hinder this. If you want to give it a try, go ahead. And especially since we were going to work on a subnational level, the attitude very much was, well, if your cities are interested and willing to do it, then yeah, give it a shot. We're actually very interested in seeing what will happen. So we thought that was really interesting, that, you know, maybe these projects can really happen. But during this time, we were talking, and concerns did come out. There was a lot of concerns about the Chinese, especially on the Chinese, from the Chinese cities and on the Chinese side. There were a lot of concerns about how clear the project was. They really wanted a very defined role. So that was one big component that they cared a lot about. They wanted to know what they were going to do. They also really wanted to know they wanted to make sure that the Africans were going to invite them in. So they wanted to be invited into the city. They didn't want to just show up. And these were two points that they started to reiterate a lot, and it became very clear. On the African side, the wariness actually came from being a little bit afraid that it was a US-Chinese cooperation project. Cities were starting to bring up, well, what if it, you know, what if it kind of takes over? What if they take over? Like, what are we going to do? So those were some of the concerns that started to rise from moving forward with this project. And what became really clear is that even though nationally everything looked like it was going to be okay, which would open the doors for subnational cooperation, at the same time, a lot of the concerns had to do with the relationship and the dynamics of this project and of what can happen. And I actually think that ties in a lot with trilateral cooperation nationally right now. Why nobody's quite sure or is trying to figure out how these would all link, like how the what the dynamics would be, who runs what, who leads what. I think those are all points of discussion. And on our end, it became very clear. So as we were coming up with these projects and starting to move forward with them, we started to realize that that the process and the structure of the of creating these projects became very, very important to how to appease some of these relational dynamics. So for example, in terms of process, it became really clear that the African side really had to be the ones to identify the project themselves, which I don't know how many of you have worked on a lot of development projects, but it can go both ways. Sometimes if African cities, you know, if they actually have very clear projects defined, then that works really well. But sometimes the external actors might have a little bit more of a push in it. In this case, it became really clear that they had to say, this is what we want to do. And not only that, to really identify how they wanted the U.S. and the Chinese to participate, the U.S. Chinese cities to participate, and also to invite both of the cities in. So it was very much a situation where the African city had to immediately take ownership and bring both sides in order for this to even start to work out. And in terms of structure, the projects themselves had to combine a bit of, they had to kind of be interesting to both the Chinese and the U.S. cities. So as many of you may know, there's a lot of infrastructure development happening from the Chinese side in Africa. So all of our projects included some kind of construction project component, where there was a little bit more expertise in it, they were a little bit more familiar with what was going to happen in terms of construction, and they could really see, and it was tangible, they could see some aspects of it. And then on the other end, we also included a lot of vocational training and expert exchanges, technical exchanges that would combine with all of the technical components. And this really, it was something that the Chinese were doing, but that the US did really well. And there was a lot of US expertise in this. And so bringing these different sides together and joining it all together allowed for us to create projects that everybody was comfortable with and that they were willing to work towards. So then from there, it became, we started these projects. And there were a couple challenges along the way. One is that all of the systems, we're a US organization. We're actually, a third of our funding comes from the State Department. And we really cater to US cities. So the cities that wanted to participate, the pivot was off of the US side, which meant that both the Chinese and African cities had a sister city in the United States. It had the same sister city in the United States, which also meant that there was like a little bit of tension in terms of, you know, who was talking to who or what was going on with what. But we were trying to work some of that out. On the Chinese side, there was actually a lot of interesting dynamics when it came to getting approval for these projects, which I don't know, it might become something that, you know, that I think will affect a lot of different areas, but we needed a lot of city approval for these projects because they covered a wide range of issues. And on the Chinese side, it just took a little bit longer and a lot more discussion about them before it got approved. For us, it was really learning how to work with them on it, but I think it was a good learning experience for us. And then on the African side, it was this idea that we can do so much with having US and Chinese city partners, which is true, but it's also limited in terms of really setting a good framework for the project. So the beginnings were a little bit rough. But from there, you can see we actually ended up starting on three pilot projects. The first one is a trilateral partnership between Nairobi, Kenya, Denver, Colorado, and Kunming, Yunnan province in China. And they're working on a primary school. The idea behind this project is that they're actually renovating one of the toilet block of this primary school. This is one of the biggest primary schools that caters to the Kibera slums, which is one of the biggest slums in Kenya, or in Nairobi. And what they found is that because the sanitation facilities are so poor, a lot of students, if they can increase the facilities, the toilet facilities, they can actually get a much higher increase of students. And the school is currently functioning at about a third of the rate it's supposed to be functioning at. It's got about 400 students and it needs about 1,200. The Kenyan primary education system is a system set up so that the more students you get, the more money the school will get. So it's kind of a catch-22. If you don't get enough students, your school isn't going to have nicer facilities because you can't pay for them. So we got together and worked on this project, and you can see the left side is before the renovation, the right side is, I was just there in September, it's been after the renovations, and it's been looking really great, so we're very excited about that. But what you can kind of see from a tiny project like this is how much the city's actually involved in all of this. So not only are the facilities, they were poor to begin with, but you have a big water issue. Nairobi's really high up. Actually, so Nairobi, Denver, and Kwame are all mile-high cities. They all deal with a lot of drought. So you end up with a situation where there's a lot of water shortages in Nairobi, and they're having problems figuring out what to do to make sure that the water's getting to them in time. And this school specifically, there's actually several high rises right around the school, and they've been sucking up all the water because they have water pumps and they can afford to suck up the water. So then you end up with a school that doesn't have any water and a bunch of students that either, you know, they're not there because the facilities aren't very nice, or they can't have, they're not healthy, there's no hygiene. And what became really interesting was bringing together both experts, water experts from Denver and from Kwame. And so they're actually dealing with a lot of similar issues, at least when it comes to drought and keeping water supply running. So we brought together experts to look at the situation in Madaraka Primary School and to kind of assess what it is that they can do. And a little bit later, actually, everybody went over to Kwame, and they went to look at Shilin County Public Grade School, which is out in some of the more rural areas of Kwame. And it's a public school that has a lot of ethnic minority students, and they have a lot of similar funding issues that this school in Nairobi has. So they were able to have a lot of interesting comparisons and discussions, and even talking about what they can do with the issue of water. And you end up with a lot of really interesting discussions. For example, when it comes to, you know, this is the picture on the left is of Nairobi's sewage company, and the picture on the right is of one of the Kwame water experts giving a presentation. And you find it's really interesting to see how everything comes together. On the Nairobi end, it's a lot of urban planning issues, drought, you know, everything mixed together that's causing these problems. So you have Kwame, which has exploded as a city within the past few decades, and they've been facing a lot of similar urban planning issues. And actually, what we found is they have a lot of water pumps within all of their buildings. But if you go to Denver, a lot of this water comes from piping underground because the US set it up years ago and it didn't need to work in that way. However, what Denver's been doing is they've been working a lot on water asset management. So figuring out when a pipe needs to be repaired or how to manage their water to be very efficient. And so when you combine all of that together, you can kind of see the layers of a city as it's developing, but also see where the discussion can come together so that it's really helping each other, everybody involved, and explaining all the different parts of what they're doing. Our second project, it's in Oshogbo, Nigeria, and they're teamed together with Asheville and Raleigh, North Carolina, and their Chinese sister city is in Shangyang, Hubei province in China. And this is a primary healthcare center. It's focused on renovating the center. There's 21 primary healthcare centers in Oshogbo. All of them are, none of them have emergency obstetrics capabilities, which is one of the reasons why maternal deaths are very common there. If a pregnancy has complications, they can't go anywhere. They would have to be sent to the state hospitals, and sometimes it takes too long. So we've outfitted this primary healthcare center with emergency obstetrics capabilities and the equipment that they would need. So this is the before and after of the renovation. And on their end, it became a lot about, you know, having medical doctors come in and do trainings and teaching and sharing experiences. So they actually brought in doctors from US and China with a lot of different equipment and technology. And what's really interesting about this is that when equipment is brought into a Oshogbo, they get quite a bit of equipment donated, but a lot of times they don't know how to use it. And it's just a matter of they may not have that technology, and they haven't, and there's nobody around that can really teach them. So this time when we came through, everybody, all the equipment that was brought, there was also a lot of training going on, a lot of discussions with the midwives, with the nurses, to talk about new ideas and new strategies. And once again, the Chinese perspective is a little bit different from the US one, and it was a really good opportunity for everybody to learn something different with what they were doing. And then the last project, it's between Zamba, Malawi, Urbana, Illinois, and Haiju District. This one's kind of the smallest of all of the cities. And in Zomba, Malawi, they're creating a compost management site. And what they did is, actually a few Urbana experts had gone over to Zomba and realized that a lot of the waste that they were throwing away was completely degradable, and it was waste that they could really compost. So in Urbana, Urbana is one of the first cities in the United States that managed a compost facility and did it well. They've been doing it since the 80s before it was a requirement, and they actually have a facility that's completely self-sustainable. It's nonprofit, and so they brought all the Malawians over in the middle of winter, which frees them, and showed them these facilities outside. So and they actually had some training. They learned about how the system worked in Urbana, and there was a similar exchange to Hydro District, where they went out there to look at kind of what's been happening when it came to sewage and waste and Hydro. The difference is that Hydro District is in Guangzhou. It's in Guangzhou City. It's huge. So they're managed. I mean, there's a million people in the district. They are managing so much waste. It's at a completely different scale. But it was very interesting to make all of the comparisons. And then what happened was, so Zomba came back with all of their knowledge, and they started to create their own compost site, compost management site that would fit with their needs. And I think going back a little bit more into development and how much the community needs to be engaged, in this case you'll see that actually from Urbana they learned that a big part of composting, having a successful site, was engaging the community and teaching them a little bit more about composting and teaching them what to do. So on Zomba's end, you'll see those are health officers on the photos on the left, and they're giving a presentation about how important it is to compost, and they did a little skit. It was really great to kind of show what they were doing. But at the same time, they really brought in a lot of their leaders. So you have traditional leaders, like the woman at the bottom. She was the leader of that small community that we were in. And she was the one who said, hey, I do composting too. And that makes a world of a difference. It's very different from, even if you have city council members from Zomba coming in and saying, oh, we need to do composting. If you have your own traditional leader there saying this, it does create a very different sense. And you could tell that the people, that the community there was much more involved. So that's kind of, you can kind of really see the range. It may be a really small project to look at, but everybody involved and how to actually get it to work and bring in the different expertise from US and China, Chinese cities, it really demonstrates what needs to happen in order to make some of these projects successful. And you know, we've just about finished most of them, so hopefully, you know, people are going to keep going back to these projects, so we're hoping that they'll stay and they'll be strong. But this has also been a really good opportunity for all of these cities to kind of see how trilateral cooperation can happen. So what's been happening now is that the discussion's been trickling up. And we have, so we're the national membership organization for sister cities, for US sister cities. We have our counterparts in China, and there's a few organizations similar to us in African countries. And what we're doing now is we're starting to talk to them about expanding this. You know, what if we bring this beyond subnational, beyond cities, or targeting several cities at once? And this is kind of, it's still in its discussion, but I think it's an idea that's really, it has a lot of strength to it, since before, you know, a lot of the discussions about trilateral cooperation, it was, we don't know how to do it, or we don't know what it'll look like. A lot of what we had seen before, it might be something like, you know, MCC provides funding for a Chinese company to go build a project in Africa. And that was a lot of the cooperation that was happening. But now it's kind of, at least these are small projects. They're micro and they affect very small communities. But at the same time, we're kind of showing that there is a structure that might be able to work. So we're really excited about that. And at the same time, I think, there's really interesting national discussion about what is happening when it comes to trilateral now. So recently, the last strategic and economic dialogues back in July 2013, there was actually a track in which they discussed development, in which USAID and the Ministry of Commerce in China agreed to participate in dialogues to look at development and to look at trilateral cooperation when it comes to development. And Africa was one of the continents, that one of the areas that they've identified. And this is new. I mean, I was talking to a USAID officer and they were so excited because this is these are new ideas coming through, and these are new breakthroughs that they're really meeting. So I think there is a lot to come about. In terms of USAID itself, it's creating focus groups that are looking just at trilateral cooperation between US, China, and Africa, looking at ways that they can actually implement different projects. So we're really starting to see, there's kind of a trend moving in this direction. I'm not sure what it means or what will come about in the years to come, but it's very exciting for us to see kind of all these new ideas happening. So finally, I wanted to end with some lessons learned about these projects. Some of these are programmatic lessons, and then some of them are more personal. I know a few of you might be interested in development work. In terms of programmatic lessons, what we've really seen is that structure and process actually matter a lot, especially if you're going to bring in more than two parties. You want to create a space where people are really comfortable in engaging with each other and in trying something that's very new. And in our case, being able to kind of identify what the structure should be and how to proceed with it, I think it really helped with bringing in all of the different cities involved. And that then tied into relationship dynamics, which became they're growing in strength. And there's actually a few interesting tidbits about the relationship dynamics. On the African side, it became really clear whenever you would bring up the Chinese, it always was about business. Like, the discussions were always about business, and it was really focused on, they were very excited about it. It was really interesting to watch. And for example, in the city of Oshogbo, they actually created an entire chamber of commerce once they knew that there was a Chinese city involved in this project, which was cool. It was very cool. But if on the African side, if you bring up Americans, it's all about aid. It's actually very, very much still focused on aid. And this is from the groups of people that I've been talking to, but that's what they're looking at. They're looking still at, kind of the more traditional relationships that have been happening in the past. On these projects specifically, the Chinese interests, it took a while. The Chinese had several motivations for participating in these projects. One of which we found ended up being really interesting was that they actually just wanted to get to know their US partners a little bit better. They just wanted to be able to work on something where they really got to know some of these cities, some of these people in the United States. At the same time, we were a little bit lucky. There were a few situations happening within China. For example, I think last year, Premier Li Keqiang mentioned, sisters, friendship cities, the Chinese call them friendship cities, they're actually within a lot of the five-year plans and strategies of the Chinese. They really look at it as a good avenue to promote people-to-people exchange and to have better mutual understanding. So last year, Premier Li Keqiang had mentioned or announced that he wanted to double the number of African Chinese sister cities, which worked really well for us because then you started to get a little bit more interest on the Chinese side. They wanted to get an African city, and so that was an interesting dynamic that came about too. And I would just say for the United States, for the Americans, I was very struck by kind of the boldness that a lot of these cities had, given that there wasn't really a precedent for this type of project, and there really weren't models. And you had, these city councilmen who just said, sure, let's try it. And they were really the catalyst to kind of kick off these projects, and that really struck me in terms of how cities are starting to really view their international relationships. And then finally, just to briefly touch on personal lessons that I've been learning throughout this project. For those of you who are interested in development work, I would say a very important skill to have is to be really strong procurement and finance. I know this is totally out of left field, but just for those of you who are interested, it's actually really, really important that you know budgeting well. And then in terms of other characteristics, it's really just a lot of being flexible, being willing to be hands-on, being willing to tackle the challenge, which I think everybody who I've been working with really have been. That's really what's come together and made this project work out in the way that it has. In terms of getting involved, for those of you who might be interested in Sister Cities International, we have internships available. We have a lot of different volunteer opportunities in terms of different activities that we might have in town. So actually, in March 2014, it's the 35th anniversary of U.S.-Chinese diplomatic relations. It's also the 35th anniversary of the first U.S.-China sister city relationship. So we'll be holding a conference there for those of you who are interested. And then if you want to learn a little bit more about the Sino-African African Initiative and about trilateral cooperation. We're holding a panel at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, also in March, and we're actually bringing everybody together. So you'll be able to, the council members, the officers, the health, public health officers, everybody who was involved, they'll be available to talk and kind of share some of their experiences as well. That's it for me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Lula. Now we're going to have a moderated discussion. It will be moderated by Professor Robert Sutter. He is a full-time professor at the Elliott School, and he is an expert on Asian and Pacific policy, as well as Asian and Pacific economics. He's also worked at the Library of Congress, State Department, and the Senate Committee on Foreign Affairs. So please welcome him up to moderate the discussion.
Well, thanks very much. We've really had a very wonderful talk and lots of different issues that could be addressed. I think just what I'll do, I'll take one from this side and then one from this side. I'd ask the people asking questions if they would identify themselves, because we're not all students at GW, and if they could do so, that would be great. Is your hand up first, sir? Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Will Robertson. I run the China Africa Research Network here in D.C. And I was really interested, because a lot of this was focused on municipalities, and one of the things, if you study China-Africa relations, you hear that the lower you are on the totem pole, the better you get along with your Chinese or American counterparts. But the higher up you get, there's more tension. So the prospect of, you know, regional partnerships or multiple cities partnering up together, that sounds like a harder sell than city to city. I was wondering if you might give your thoughts on that.
Right, so actually all of our partnerships that we usually work with, they're bilateral. So city to city is really, if you're just bringing together two cities and not trying to climb up or bring more people in, it makes things work pretty well. There's a lot of things that can be accomplished, a lot of different activities, events, not events, but trade delegations, all sorts of things that can happen. When it comes to bringing in more actors, it gets a lot more messy, because there is a situation where the interest of everybody is a little bit different and you're trying to connect all of it. And at the same time, you're catching more attention. And I say this because I think we've actually been able to fly under the radar a little bit. There were actually several instances where this project almost got up to governor level. In Nigeria, the project almost got up to governor level. And it was actually a really bad position for us to be in, because once it gets up there, there's a lot more bureaucracy, a lot more people in between to get through to even try to do anything. Our project's actually, it's not that big. So getting up to that level didn't make any sense at all. And you had to bring in a lot more different agencies to be involved. And so it really took a lot of people to say, hey, let's calm down. This is a smaller project. It's meant for a city. It's actually meant for one community within a city. Just focus on that. And that kind of cleared the path to be able to implement the project.
Yeah. Questions on this side? Please, Grace.
I'm Grace. I'm a student here as well as with the IAS. Over the summer, I worked with the Houston Office of Protocol and International Affairs that dealt with our sister city program.
Right.
And one of the issues that I saw on the meetings I sat in on was the language barrier, especially between the Houston mayor and a lot of the Chinese delegations that came in from our sister cities. So I was just wondering how you guys dealt with that, and how the language barrier may have thrown things off or even helped things with translators, or just issues with that.
Right. On that issue specifically, I'm fluent in both Chinese and English, and I think that actually helped a lot in terms of communication. On the U.S. side, there were quite a few cities that they had a lot of Chinese that maybe had ties to their sister cities, and that helped with some of the communication. Often it is a matter of having a translator around and speaking, and it hinders a lot of the conversation. It makes it, it slows things down a little bit. But we always try to incorporate a lot of activities into what we're doing. So even with, for example, with the water expert exchange, at the end, the Nairobians actually brought in one of some entertainment that brought in some of their dancers, and everybody got up and danced, and that just makes it makes everybody feel much more at ease, and it kind of lowers the language barrier there.
Yes, gentleman here, please.
I'm Rodrigo. I'm a student here at the other school, too. And I wanted to ask you about something you said, perception and stereotypes that Africans have of like the Chinese more businessmen and Americans more aid in development and classical NGOs.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, what does that, how does your organization feel about that stereotype in the sense that which path is better or more productive or reaching more results on the field?
Right.
And how does that affect, like, how you position yourself or define yourself? Before you talk about CSR and development, but apparently, but from what you said, that's kind of a little more rejected in Africa, so just comments on that.
Right. I would say CSR isn't rejected in Africa. I think it's just that every country in Africa viewed it differently. And they all had different expectations when it came to CSR, which is why we kind of had to back off from it. It was also a sensitive term with the Chinese from some of the discussions that we were having, because you know the Chinese are doing a lot, and they really have. They've been doing a lot. They've been donating. They've been working. They've been trying to get to know their neighborhoods a little bit better, things like that. And I think that's kind of why they don't like the term, because they feel like it's a little bit judgmental. What I would say is that. Both are really good. Both focusing on business and providing technical assistance or aid. They're really good. I think they very much can complement each other. I think what is interesting is that the reason why the perspectives were interesting to us is that it was very much of how Nigeria was perceiving. What the U.S. were doing, what the Chinese were doing. And if you're looking at that and you look at, you know, Power Africa, Trade Africa, like all of these different initiatives that are coming out right now in terms of U.S. trying to promote business in Africa, it kind of shows that there's a two-way street there. On one hand, the Africans or at least the Nigerians, are often viewed the U.S. In more of an aid capacity, but maybe at the same time, the U.S. does the same with Nigeria. So, in order to promote more of these policies, which are focusing more on business and trade with Africa, as the U.S. has started to, it's there's a lot of other barriers there as well.
Gentleman in the back.
Yeah, I'm Clay. I'm here at the Elliott School of Development Security, and looking at the projects, it's easy to look at this small project. Yes, it's successful. I guess what happens are cities exerting pressure on the regional government to continue these types of projects, or how do you kind of track the ripple effects at the projects?
Right, so these projects, they've already started to kind of expand on their own. And so what we're seeing is, well, actually, there's a lot of different things happening. But for example, I'll just give you Nairobi as an example. So Nairobi's education system within the city actually used to be coordinated out of the Ministry of Education. And it was a big problem for Nairobi because the wrong schools were getting, it was very hard for the right schools to get the support that they needed. It's only recently been finally moved down to a Nairobi city county level. They've kind of devolved a little bit in terms of their government. And so it's moved down to the right level now, where they're actually able to facilitate some of this aid a little bit better. Not only that, they've actually started to, within Nairobi itself, they've been holding, they've started to do more coordination for what it is that they want to see happen. So when this project came about, it wasn't exactly the city that was pushing it. It was maybe it was an NGO that was affiliated with the city that was pushing it, and now the city's taken much more ownership of it, and they're kind of directing where it is that they want to go with it. So in terms of that, they're actually starting to put in their own resources into this project, which is expanding it a little bit. And then what's happening is, for example, in Kwameen, there's actually, there's a few companies in Kwameen, even even nationally, there's a few companies that might be working in Nairobi, for example. And now they're going, they know that there's been this project between Kwame and Nairobi. So some of them will stop by Kwame and say, hey, we're building this, and this is happening. There's they're building this road that actually cuts right through the district that the school's in, and they want to do something for that area. And so they actually want to focus on that school and see if they can adopt it or run some sort of program with it. So there's a lot of natural expansion that's happening. In terms of how it's going to affect the regional, a bit of a higher level policy, that I really don't know. That I think right now we really do focus on the municipal, on the city, on the communities. So I'm not sure if it's going to go back up that far. But in terms of what's happening within the communities, I think more and more crevices of the community are being affected.
Thanks. Questions on this side? Yes, gentleman there in the blue shirt.
My name is Greg. I'm at the Elliott School. My question is, are there more programs in addition to the things you showed here that are being done for this initiative? And if not, are there any planned expansions in other countries or other cities that the group has been working on?
Right. So, honestly, in terms of if you're really looking at trilateral projects between US, China, and Africa, you know, I did a lot of research on this beforehand, and that something I might have missed something, but there really aren't very many. A lot of what was happening were a lot of discussions and forums about maybe how to implement this. I was looking for models because I wanted to know what it is that we could do. And it was really hard to find something like that. So on our end, when we started, we wanted to start small because we didn't really know what would happen or if the whole thing fell apart or anything like that. On our end, it was these three projects, really focus on these three projects, and that's what we've been doing. In terms of expansion, we've been talking to a few foundations, USAID, to see if this is something that can be bigger or at least maybe tackle a few different cities within one country. It's been kind of difficult to focus on three African countries with just US and China, because they're very different. So maybe focusing just on Kenya and tackling several countries there, or several cities there, or something like that. And they're discussions that we're having right now. So maybe in a few months you'll find out. As of now, these are the projects that are happening.
Yes, gentlemen there, please.
My name is Aman, and I'm also at Elliott with EIS. One of the problems that we face in developing countries is corruption, particularly on local levels. Since you're working with some of these local officials, how do you ensure that the people you're working with are indeed using the funds or the opportunities you provide for the right purposes, and make sure that help is actually given to the people in that district?
Right. That's a good question. It's a really interesting question. So the reason why I said under personal lessons, I put procurement. Procurement is very important when it comes to making sure the money is going to the right place. So we actually, our organization has a lot of really strict requirements when it comes to procurement. We're also, since we're funded by the State Department, we have to follow a lot of the rules that they've set out too. We need to kind of be within the guidelines of both. And I think from there, the way that the US does procurement, it's very different from maybe how the Chinese might do procurement or how the Africans do procurement. And because this was a US-funded project, we kept the US standards going. And the reason why it really worked out well, just to be perfectly honest, the money went directly from my organization to vendors. It would go directly from me to the contractor with nobody in between. We had our partner organizations, and they received funding for the administration and stuff that they needed. But in terms of how money was transferred, it would go directly that way, and that we would make sure that everything would work properly because of it. In addition, we know all of our partners on the ground really well. They're people that we've worked with for a long time, and that really made everything a lot easier. So it just any issues that we had, or maybe we were worried about certain things, we just bring it up with them and they took care of it, or they would tell us what they were doing. So there's both the trust aspect and then how procurement was set up within my organization.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Questions on this side? Yeah, yes, Dave?
Dave Keegan, the State Department. I just want to follow up on that question of corruption.
I'm pretty familiar with the kind of American environment that you described. How did the Chinese side of it feel? Because they had different relationships, and oftentimes when you have different countries involved in assistance projects, each of them may want to work with their own companies that are in the region. So how did that, would seem to me, one of those places where the trilateral could get very tricky.
Yes, that's a very good question. So we brought everybody together in February of 2013. We brought them all to Nairobi, and we had our set of policies and procedures. And it became kind of an argument back and forth about why something had to be done in the way that it did. It was not just, you know, it was between the US side and the Chinese side, and then the US side and the African side, but why we were following the procedures that we did. On our end, we had to enforce our rules because my organization was going to get audited for it, and it was ultimately the responsibility was on us. And I think everybody understood that, and at the end, that's how it worked out. But it sparked a really good conversation about how different places do procurement. So on the Chinese side, often they have a list, maybe the government will have a list of preferred vendors, or they have a structure that they've set up themselves too, but it might not be as meticulous maybe as ours ended up being. In some cases that might have worked a lot better just because ours took so long. One of the projects was delayed 4 months because we were having issues with procurement. But it was a good discussion that we started to have. I think we kind of forced our way through, given the structure and given that we were the ones providing funding. But in the future, if it is the Chinese side offering or the Chinese side that's taking up the funding for a particular project, I think procurement's gonna end up a little bit different.
Rob Ward from American University, Master's candidate. So in dealing with the trilateral arrangement that Sister Cities has created, who has ultimate programmatic control? Is it Sister Cities as the forum, or is it a matter of who's bringing what funding to the table? And within that, how do you deal with power inequalities?
Right. So in terms of all of what people wanted to do regarding the program, all of the cities decided upon that. So, you know, they actually spent a few months deciding what they wanted to do. They came together in February in Nairobi to agree upon it. On our end, it was a lot of support. It was, you know, any sort of ideas or something that maybe they wanted to run across with us. And then it was a matter of transferring money. That actually became a really big part of our role because we were able to kind of take money out of the equation to prevent it from being another issue that would cause more problems, and they could just focus on their program. And I think that really helped with the structure. In the future, if there's different funders coming in to support the program, you know, if it's going to be from maybe the Chinese side or something else, I personally think that that worked really well because then people could just focus on what it is that they needed to do. But you know, it could also end up differently.
Questions on this side? Lady there, please. Yes, please.
I'm from Georgetown University, and I really appreciate your information on the projects. But when it comes to trilateral relationship, city level relationship, I assume that it will be a mutual beneficial relationship. Do you see
Yes. So what's happened here? What helps with the trilateral is that you have multiple cities to pick from. So it's not just that maybe the U.S. side. You know, there's not a requirement that you benefit me, I benefit you. There's kind of a three-way happening. So what's happened with this program is that both the U.S. side and the African side are actually very interested in economic development with the Chinese. So, for example, when Denver and Nairobi went to Kunming, they gave investment promotion presentations to a number of investors in Kunming to see if Kunming might be interested in investing in both Nairobi and in Denver. And so we've been including a lot of these components into the program so that it expands a little bit, but everybody feels like they're getting something out of it as well as putting something in. Thanks.
Lady here, please.
Hi, my name is Cindy. I'm with the Yale School of the IIS. I was just kind of wondering how you guys pick, I guess, or select the cities to participate in the sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a bunch of requirements or if there has to be mutual communication. I'm just wondering how it kind of starts off.
So the original sister city relationships, they start out from a number of different ways. Sometimes it's maybe there's a big diaspora community within one city that's of a group from another city. And that's actually, it happens quite a lot. And that could spark a relationship. Sometimes it's maybe the mayor of one city went to visit another one and there's, that sparked something. Back, in the 50s and 60s, there were actually a lot that started when somebody may have married somebody else overseas, and they wanted to keep those connections going, and they kept that relationship going. Now what we're seeing is that, especially U.S. cities, if you look at a lot of the discussion about U.S. cities, it's about, like the globalization of cities or making cities kind of the economic center and how to globalize. U.S. cities are really looking at selecting sister cities in a very strategic way, looking at ones that have industries, maybe similar problems, or maybe geographically similar. Support cities often pair up because they want to share what they've been experiencing. So what we have on our website, we have something called Cities Seeking Cities, and U.S. cities can fill out a profile and highlight, their industries that they want or areas that they're really interested in. We have a lot of foreign cities that come in and they fill out a profile saying that they want a U.S. city that has a population of XYZ and maybe in these different regions of the United States, and then we match them up that way. We usually do a lot of personal interviews in between to kind of facilitate the connections, but that's how it's been working recently.
One more question on the side. Lady there, please.
My name's Creighton. I'm from the LU School. Right now I'm actually taking a class with Ambassador Shin about China and Africa. And one thing that we talk a lot about is the U.S. and China have very different approaches to development and aid and general involvement in Africa. So how did you ever see that play out a bit? Different strategies sort of funding
heads. Yeah. I think one of the biggest maybe that plays out is non-interference, and you kind of see that a lot. When it comes to cooperation, I know non-interference is something that's discussed a lot. I personally don't really buy it. And I say that because, honestly, this has kind of worked. And I think it's a matter of identifying a proper project. And instead of doing that, I think, it is very, actually setting up a structure to make this work is very difficult, to make it work in a way that both sides see it as something that they can do. So I think that's why non-interference is being tossed around a lot. But what I did find, not with these projects specifically, but in a lot of my discussions, there was one situation, for example, where I was speaking with a commercial officer at one of the Chinese embassies in Africa, and that particular African country was, their minister of finance was discussing how to reform some of their financial policies. They invited the counselor to come and give China's point of view, what China's been learning, and he didn't want to do it because he felt like he was interfering with their domestic policy. So something like that is, you kind of realize that it is very much there. When you bring it down to the subnational level, I think a lot of it goes away. I think a lot of that political, those reactions, or maybe fearing getting too much attention from it, I think that goes away. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, sure. If anybody's interested in learning more about sister cities or volunteering or our internship program, there's a sign-up sheet up here if you'd like to fill that out, too.
Thank you, everyone, for coming, and I hope you have a good time and learn a lot.
Do you mind taking around a few minutes to take a picture with the IIS board members that are here?
Sure. That's fine.
We just like to get a picture with... to publish it. Are you okay if it goes on Facebook for the week?
Okay. It's fine. Okay.
technology.
Mine's for talking about this.
Hang out, Greg?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, what happened here?
Oh, I got bored. Some bark shaking.
I was bored.
So now I'm looking at skin.
I thought it was just like weightlifting lean times. It's like, you know.
Well, that too. I can't afford to get a class.
I've been cutting my own hair.